President Obama says most of the troops will be out of Afghanistan by the end of 2016. Some of the billions of dollars worth of equipment over there will come back to be refurbished. Some will have to be sold or destroyed. All those people, all that gear, it's a major logistics effort. So how will the military pull it off? For some answers, we talked to retired Army Lieutenant General David Barno. He's a senior fellow at the Center for a New American Security. Lieutenant General Barno, good morning.
Morning, Tom.
And I guess we should point out that you commanded forces in Afghanistan from 2003 to 2005, correct?
That's correct, with a much smaller number than the large numbers we put in the last several years.
All right.
About 20,000 during my time.
Okay, so tell us in general how this goes. I mean, it's one thing to ship it over. Shipping it all back is not exactly like getting rid of a tour bus and getting on a plane.
Now, this is a massive undertaking. The good news is that the military has been working on this for several years. This President Obama's announcement here earlier last week doesn't really change that, but it does give them some, you know, predictability now for the next 2 years in terms of the glide slope of drawing down those forces. There was some concern, of course, that there was a possibility we would go down to no American troops at the end of this year, which would have caused an immense logistical bottleneck. So now I think the logisticians that have been working on drawing down this mountain of supplies for the last 2 or 3 years can continue and do it at a deliberate pace.
So right now we've got, what, about 90,000 troops there at this moment?
I think it's quite a bit less than that, actually. On the American side, it's probably well under half of that. The numbers I'm hearing are probably in the under 30,000 American troop range, heading down towards, at the end of the year, about 9,800, which is what the president announced last week.
Okay, and so if you take the troops, whatever number it is, and how many people altogether, if you add everyone else that's there, that has to come home via the military?
Well, the troops are less difficult to move back than the immense amount of equipment, supplies, all of the things that have been brought into Afghanistan that have accumulated over 13 years. Much of that, as you suggest, is not going to get brought home. It's going to either be sold off. Some of it will probably be destroyed. Some of it's going to be unserviceable and unusable. What we are going to try and do and have been doing for the last 2 years is sort through this incredible pile of valuable property and find the best items that we want to bring back to the U.S. Almost everything that comes out of Afghanistan either has to flow via roads and line haul through Pakistan or to the north through Russia, and in a fair bit of this will probably end up being flown out, which is exorbitantly expensive. So the military's got to be very thoughtful about what they really want to pay the cost to bring home versus what they leave back in country.
Well, let's talk about the people, though, for just a minute. Say there's 9,800 soldiers and I probably tens of thousands of support people and contractors and so forth. Do the contractors, how do they get home? The contractor people, are they on their own or do they get military support to get them out of there?
Now, typically, the contractors move back and forth by commercial air. They don't come in on military aircraft. The U.S. Air Force and even U.S. Air Force contract flights are principally dedicated to the military folks moving back and forth. The contract force, that's typically part of their contract with government, is the contractor moves them in via commercial air. Sometimes they might even charter some of their own aircraft to do that and then moves them back out again.
And what kind of decisions go into deciding which troops in particular go first and who stays behind?
Well, as you know, we're drawing down the combat mission, and so the U.S. combat mission by the end of this year is going to end. So a lot of those infantry battalions out there that may be in combat roles, or even some that are supporting the Afghan army in trainer roles and advisory roles out beyond the main areas in Kabul and Bagram Airfield, those will be coming out, you know, sooner. And I think we'll be drawing down quite a bit of our advisory and support effort, although a good bit, about two-thirds of that 9,800 is going to remain as trainers. That will be a lot less than is doing that right now today.
And what about the security of the people leaving? I mean, do they back out shooting, like sort of backing out a door and making sure you're covered on the way out? Or how do you make sure, you know, those people are not the last ones killed on the way out?
Right. That's obviously the foremost consideration as you're drawing down to smaller numbers. You know, the enemy knows that you're taking people out. He knows what your number is going to look like here. He's not sure exactly how or when you're going to do that. So that's an advantage to us. But I don't think anyone should, here in the United States, should think that there are, you know, enemies pressing at the gate of every one of these outposts and that there's a constant attack underway and you're having to break contact under fire. That's not going to be the case. So there's a plenty of security there in the country, and there'll be a very carefully planned withdrawal exercise to get people out of there, and it'll go quite well, I think. But I think you're exactly right. Security will be the number one consideration.
We are speaking with retired Lieutenant General David Barno. He is now a senior fellow and co-director of the Responsible Defense Program at the Center for New American Security. So talking about the equipment now for a moment, you said that a lot of it, probably more than half of it, will have to be destroyed. What kind of process does that require?
I don't think it'll be that much. I think the military would be very careful. More than half would be way beyond what I would anticipate. But there is going to be some things, and I think we're already, for example, destroying some of the very heavily armored mine-resistant vehicles that we took in the tens of thousands into Afghanistan, because some of them are simply they're worn out. They've been beat up over many years. It doesn't make sense to pay tens of thousands of dollars to put them on a line haul vehicle, bring them back through Pakistan, put them on a ship, and bring them to the United States. That would be more cost than perhaps the vehicle is even worth. So some of those are actually being cut up and destroyed in that way. There'll be other things that are turned over to the Afghan military. They've got certainly a need to continue fighting and continue using the items over there that still have a good shelf life in them. But I think the items that will be destroyed will be in the minority, but there is some of that going on right now.
Now, in the United States, if you had old vehicles like that, the scrap iron would be worth something, and there are shredders. There's an infrastructure in the United States to create scrap iron. Does anything like that exist in Afghanistan or its environs?
To a limited extent. There's certainly that in Pakistan, and there's a good economic flow back and forth between Afghanistan and Pakistan despite the war. And so some of these vehicles, for example, that are getting cut up, they're being cut up so they can't be used by, a future enemy. But the scrap iron from that still is reusable, and I would expect that would get cycled back through one of these processes.
Now, what about things that might have sensitive electronics on them, either radios or maybe aircraft, that kind of thing that can't come back, but you can't just leave that laying around either, right?
Sure, that'll be very, very carefully scrutinized. One of the most important things we're going to do as we draw out all this equipment is make sure we leave nothing sensitive behind that could reveal any of our operating techniques, could reveal any of our security measures for our communications or our computers. So you can be absolutely assured that that'll be carefully looked at. And if there's any computer drives that are not coming back or any other radio components, those will be absolutely destroyed. But most of that stuff is going to be brought back here to the United States. It's fairly easy to move around, and it's sensitive enough you just don't want to leave any of it back behind in country.
Now, what about the withdrawal from Iraq? Is there anything that can be learned for the Afghanistan withdrawal? Are there lessons learned from the more recent one, the withdrawal from Iraq, that can be applied here?
There are some, but unfortunately for Afghanistan, Iraq actually had a next-door neighbor in Kuwait that became the parking lot for all the equipment coming out of Iraq. So much of it was simply driven out and parked in Kuwait, and then we moved it back to the United States kind of on our own schedule. That's not an option in Afghanistan. There aren't any good neighboring countries that are going to be friendly parking lots for us to just simply move all of this across the border and then, at our own pace, bring it back here. So that'll be difficult. Certainly, we've learned a lot in terms of how to do a logistics retrograde. And I understand that some of the stuff coming out of Afghanistan is actually going to go back to the Persian Gulf, to probably Kuwait, to be refurbished and then brought back to the United States. So that is still a base for our operations, our land operations in the theater.
So that's to say the Desert Storm withdrawal really probably doesn't offer much for Afghanistan either, because that was from Iraq.
No, that's correct. And it also, is in a very, very different setting in terms of the neighborhood there and having, friendly countries where we already had bases. We have a very, very large military base in Kuwait that was used during the retrograde from Desert Storm and used in the retrograde from our recent Iraq operations.
And so when the United States goes somewhere, when the military goes somewhere, is the withdrawal, whenever it might be, planned as part of the planning for the entrance in the first place?
Only if it's anticipated the withdrawal is going to happen relatively soon. And so if you knew you were going in to do an operation and you planned to be out in 2 months or 3 months, you would then certainly plan how you were going to do that withdrawal or that retrograde. If you were going in and it wasn't clear when you were going to return, then there probably wouldn't be a detailed withdrawal plan that was part of the original, invasion force exercise.
I mean, when you were there in 2003 and 2002, 2005, it's probably fair to say there was no really idea of when it would end.
No, absolutely. And we were much more interested in bringing things in that we needed to be able to fight the conflict back then than we were worrying about how to get out the fairly modest amount of equipment and people that we had on the ground at that time.
And just a broader question, because it is the 70th anniversary of D-Day, and when these things are studied in the military, are there still lessons from that long ago about how to go in and how to come out again that inform doctrine today?
There actually are. I mean, it's remarkable how much continuity you can find going back, particularly in the logistics field. You know, the United States Army in particular is the world's leading logistics organization and can do virtually anything anywhere in the world with enough time, planning, and resources. The Normandy invasion was one example. That was a complete, you know, U.S. Army show. No Marines in that amphibious operation, incredibly enough. They were all in the Pacific. And so the Army learned a great deal about large-scale logistics operations from that, and those lessons continue to be applied today in all of our operations overseas.
And in more recent years, has all military logistics gotten better at knowing what's in what box and what boat or plane it's on or ship or plane it's on, and so they can find things at the other end, say, better than
they have,
but
that's still a bit of a mystery. I mean, we're moving, you know, way forward in using, you know, radio frequency tagging on items to be able to see where they are, and, you know, advanced computer chips in various places to be able to, and GPS trackers. But the immensity of this operation is so large and it's taken place over so many years that I'm highly confident there's still a lot of things we are not sure where they are located in Afghanistan, and we're going to find some exciting things when we open up some of those boxes.
All right, so your final advice to the commanders there now for getting back everything orderly and safely?
Plan carefully and execute the plan and try and stay on your timeline.
All right. Retired Lieutenant General Dave Barno is a senior fellow and co-director of the Responsible Defense Program at the Center for a New American Security. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom. Great talking with you.